This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And it's a first. It's our first podcast of 2020. I'm here with Layla Mutens, who is our nutritionist in residence. And we're about to kick off a new year with Q&A podcasts, wherein we answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. How are you, Layla? How were your holidays?
Great. Went quickly.
Yeah.
Very fast. Lovely. Wonderful time.
Yeah,
how about you?
It was actually a little more protracted because, as it happens, the holidays fell right on some of our work days, so it kind of blew away a couple of weeks of office practice.
And right.
Therefore, I didn't get to sit with you and do a podcast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of took a little breather at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I read three books. I took advantage of the time. I read a book called Man's Fourth Best Hospital, which I reviewed for the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
It's by a guy named Samuel Shem.
Uh-huh.
That's his pen name.
Mm-hmm.
His real name is, I believe, Bergman. And he was the guy who wrote House of God,
mm-hmm.
which was a very controversial book when I went to medical school. They said, you know, don't read it. It'll make you cynical. And it was the utmost, the most cynical, sardonic book about the experience of a medical intern, which around that time is what I was.
Oh.
You know, first year and, you know, beleaguered in a hospital and, you know, no sleep, overtime, crazy hours. And, you know, desperate times. And it was kind of a balm for me to read this book because it was this very dark humor about, you know, working in a hospital. So flash forward 41 years later, he's written another book called Man's Fourth Best Hospital.
Wow.
Which, you know, I have to say it's a bit of a slog to get through that book.
Okay.
You know, but I read it because I have fond remembrances of the first book.
Yeah.
And, you know, 41 years later, it's basically the plot is the same crew who trained in that hospital, get together to revive the practice of medicine in the face of a lot of obstacles. Mm. Now, obstacles include, electronic medical records, you know, crazy insurance coding, you know, the profit-oriented hospital system.
Electronic medical records, where they look up 10% of the time to look at the patient.
Right,
I
exactly.
Say,
this is like 90% of the time you're looking in screens and, you know, so anyway, so they tackle it and, you know, basically it sort of takes a humanistic view of, you know, the ultimately futile efforts of these intrepid doctors who are now well along in their careers like I am to idealistically go back and, you know, fix things.
Yeah.
And they, you know, so that's, it was an interesting book. So I review that in our newsletter. You can check it out at drhoffman.com. Then I also read a book that I've been long planning to read and I didn't have a real space of time, but things get a little boring around Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
So I read a book called Medical Nihilism.
Oh.
What a great title.
Yes.
And it is by it's not like, you know, you might say, well, this is by some kind of, you know, hippie-ish, you know, kind of radical person, you know, who is an alternative medicine doctor. But it's actually by a very well-respected philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
He's at Cambridge University in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, the Oxford-Cambridge is like the creme de la creme of academic institutions. And he's a very prominent philosopher of science. Mm. There's a branch of science, which is the philosophy of how you make medical hypotheses and prove them. And it's sort of the science of
the philosophy of science.
Of studying science.
Yeah.
So what he says is that our current medical model does not conform to good scientific principles. In terms of the way that we do these randomized controlled trials that are really not so randomized, that are very biased and subject to all kinds of statistical manipulation and mm-hmm. meta-analyses are very flawed. And, you know, that we base a lot of our medical therapies on scant evidence is what the basic hypothesis is. And he calls ultimately for something that he terms gentle medicine, which is very low intervention medicine, like minimize.
Non-invasive.
Don't trust, some of the procedures and drugs that you have been told are, so efficacious because they're really not and that they carry more harms than have been revealed. So we went into that. And now I'm reading a third book called The Way We Eat. And The Way We Eat is by B. Wilson, who's written a clever book about how people acquire food preferences as children and how to encourage good eating habits among children. And now she's written a book which is sort of a general overview and critique of how our diets have changed over millennia, and in our modern era we've kind of short-circuited our evolution. And along those lines, but it's a kind of a clever summation of many of the themes that we talk about here on Intelligent Medicine.
Yeah.
Is there's an evolutionary mismatch between, our genes and the way we eat and the food processing and the advertising. And she even gets into, the negative effects of stigmatizing obesity. You can't make fun of people of color. You can't make fun of people by religion. You can't make fun. It depends on what religion.
You can't make fun of people's nationalities.
Right.
Sexual
orientation.
Yeah.
But one group that is stigmatized and is the butt of jokes, I think frankly we contributed to it in the nutrition field is people who are overweight or obese. And the net effect, we talk about obesity, diet, and the net effect is to really demoralize and discourage these people and create a lot of shame, which then worsens their psychological outlook, which then makes them more prone to seek solace in
more food.
Right?
More food, exactly.
Yeah. So, that's just one of the themes, and it's a very panoramic book looking at food, the way we promote food, the way that food has changed, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice book. I think I'm going to review that too. I already reviewed Medical Nihilism, which will come out as a newsletter article.
Well, these are all very timely because another headline is by 2030, half of adults will be obese.
Right.
In the United States, which is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So.
The normal weight are an endangered minority.
Uh-huh.
It's like,
that's true.
Maybe you can get disability status. Affirmative action for normal weight people.
Oh.
Yeah.
You have to hire somebody obese.
No.
Check their BMI of...
When they're the majority, it's going to be affirmative action for a minority, which are the people who are normal weight.
Oh, right.
Right?
That's
See,
right.
That's how it works.
You'll have to go.
See, you're not woke.
I guess I'm not woke enough. I guess I'm not woke enough.
So anyway,
oh my goodness.
So it there's this really scary trend, and what it suggests is that we've been barking up the wrong tree with our dietary recommendations. And that's why also a very high percentage of millennials, who are so the up and coming generation who will be in leadership throughout the country, have a profound distrust of dietary advice that comes from, professional organizations and the government.
Yeah.
Because we've been burned. We've gotten
totally. The whole
misguided
low fat
advice.
Lie and so forth and so on. Yeah. That's created a crisis.
The other thing is, did a podcast with, Corinne Bush, she's the co-founder of the American Nutrition Association, which is now this new organization, which is an amalgamation of prior organizations, including the Certifying Board for Nutrition Specialists, of which I'm a board member.
Mm-hmm.
And I also helped to write the exam for certification.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a nice conversation about what that organization is poised to do, to try to do something about this on a societal level
you know, the terrible toll that poor diets are taking on Americans' health.
But unfortunately, so much of the advice coming from, you know, the government MyPlate, now this big, big push by many, some of them deemed to be radical, about going plant-based for climate change, and it's not, it's really not cutting the mustard with regard to
it's a faux evidence. It's a faux radicalism, because when I was a young person, the radicals were not, they were against the establishment. And, you know, the people who were marching in the streets, you know, they were attacked by the police. They were, you know, the National Guard was called out. Now, some of these so-called radicals are being co-opted by the food industry. It's like, okay, you want vegan faux meat? Great. We can monetize that.
Oh, totally.
We can make the, you know, you see all the ads for, I watch a lot of TV. I don't know whether you watch commercial TV, but I see all these ads for the Impossible Burger.
I'm watching, and I'm seeing it in the grocery store. Right. I'm seeing Beyond Meat. I'm looking at this this awful color.
It's promoted.
I'm reading the ingredients, saying I'm not going to eat that.
It's like you'll like it, and even if you don't worry. It's good for the planet.
Like,
it's good for the planet.
It's good for the planet.
It's like, shut up and eat your faux meat because it's good for the planet, which is dubious claim because, you know. Anyway.
Totally.
All right, we're off on a tangent. As usual, let's get to questions.
We have an email from Dan. Years back, the good doctor, that's you, Dr. Hoffman.
As opposed to the not so good doctor?
Years back, the good
doctor. I'm the so-so doctor.
recommended Propax with NT factor as a daily vitamin. I'd like to know his latest recommendation. I'm an active 72-year-old who goes to the gym 5 days a week, and I want to remain in good health. Any guidance would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. So they're sponsors of ours, and they've been among our most consistent sponsors for like 20 years or more. And it's a good product. Propax with NT factor is designed as a one-stop shop for all nutritional needs. It's got the NT factor, which I think that's the secret sauce. And then it has, you know, pretty good multi, and it's got fish oil, high-quality fish oil, and it's got a probiotic. So that covers a lot of ground. So if there's like, you know, you don't want to take anything else, you could just take that. It comes in a little pack.
Right.
And
the pack and
Covers a lot of bases, you know. But, you know, a lot of people have their Vivid Multi, or they're taking a million other things, and they just want the NT factor. They have their own fish oil and their own probiotic. So I would suggest that they take NT factor alone. And there's
good for energy.
Yeah, so there's NT factor products that I'm checking out FullScript right now, on FullScript they have a professional formula. I always, when you have a chance to order, you know, a commercial, you know, over the counter formula versus a professional formula, it's better to get the professional formula.
Yes.
The NT factor is more potent that way.
The so-called pharmaceutical grade. We have to start calling it the nutraceutical grade without the word pharmaceutical in there so much, because...
Yeah, and they have a product that's pretty good called Healthy Aging, which is NT factor plus some cofactors. And then you can take Healthy Aging along with your all the other vitamins that we tell you to take. You know?
Right, right.
So...
take that along with it.
Yeah. I think... pretty much, let's see, you know, see if there's anything for your specific.
This is for a 72-year-old active male.
Well, that NT factor is really important because it's going to help your mitochondria. I mean, that's it's directed toward mitochondrial support. It's one of the supplements that actually has scientific backing, because there are studies that show that it enhances energy production. And, you know, improves the scores of people who suffer from fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, Gulf War syndrome, you know, various fatigue syndromes. I've seen it work in very debilitated cancer patients, for example. So, you know.
And dysfunctioning mitochondria is often the basis for many chronic diseases, cancer included. So taking good care of your mitochondria is a way to go. NT factor helps with that.
And you know, it's it's actually, it's a nice synergy between, you know, they want to sponsor and get the word out, and I'm a big believer in it, so it's been a good partnership with them.
That's great. Dan, thanks for your question. Keep on going. Keep on keeping on, as we would say, right?
Yeah, you can order products that we talk about through Fullscript.
Mm-hmm. Go to drhoffman.com and click on the store.
The store, and then it'll ask you to you have to sign in with your email and a password, mm-hmm. and then you can shop on Fullscript, as many of our listeners do.
Great. We have an email from Judy. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I have a toenail fungus on my big toe for a couple of years, and I heard of a product called Fungix, F-U-N-G-I-X, which supposedly has good results. Have you heard of it, or can you recommend something else?
Yeah, this is one of these perennial problems that just keeps coming up, and you know, whether it's tea tree oil, or whether it's oregano oil.
Oregano oil would be good. Undeclinic acid.
Yeah, that's like a lot of over-the-counter formulas have antifungals in them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try that. But, you know, what I got to say is that having suffered from this a lot when I was younger, along with athlete's foot, my nails are incomparably better because I'm on a very clean, low-sugar diet.
Oh, yeah. That's everything.
Yeah.
Maybe even taking some olive leaf extract orally is also helpful.
Internally.
In that regard. I'm looking at the ingredients of this Fungix formula. I'm not seeing anything here to be wary of, and especially it's external. Applying it to your toenails.
Yeah.
And Judy was wondering, because she's on Coumadin.
Any contraindication, because it's not going to thin your blood or interfere with the blood thinning effects of the Coumadin.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she's on Coumadin suggests that she's got some health problems that may undermine her immune defenses.
Right. The other thing, Judy, I did read, you know, the directions on this Fungix product, and you got to apply it 4 times a day. Okay, morning and night should be enough.
I know.
4 times a day, when are you going to stop and, take off your socks or your pantyhose to apply this thing, and first you want to wash your feet?
This is the problem with a lot of these things, is that they... the topicals is you have to assiduously use them for a long time, for
months.
3-6 months. Now, you can take oral medication, but the oral medication is pretty harmful.
Especially
liver toxicity.
Lamisil comes to mind.
And other forms of medication that used to be popular and advertised on TV. I don't know what became of it, whether it's just less profitable for them to advertise it, or merely there's some safety concerns about it.
Hmm. So, okay. Judy, thank you for your question. All right. Let's see here. We've got a question from Rocky. Happy New Year to Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Would you talk more about intermittent fasting?
Whoa, yeah. There's a whole lot to say about intermittent fasting, because amazingly, I recently discontinued my subscription to the New England Journal of Medicine because...
Congratulations.
Part of it was that it just continually promoted new drugs.
Yeah.
And it was just about drugs. And I would look at the studies and I would say, wow, this is terrific. This drug prolongs survival time in women with metastatic cancer from 8 months to 11 months, and that's the basis for the drug being approved.
Mm-hmm.
And bottom line, they all died anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how they promote these things. So I said, it's expensive. I'm not involved in that branch of medicine very much anymore, and rarely is there an article that I find, very relevant. Sometimes a nice article like on fish oil or B vitamins or something, but very rarely. Big article at the year end, right after my subscription ran out.
Uh-huh.
I had to find a place to get it printed for free.
Uh-huh.
It was about intermittent fasting and time restricted feeding.
Mm.
And it was actually by a kidney specialist who himself employs these techniques and has been doing it for 20 years. And he wrote a very scholarly article about the health benefits of intermittent fasting, looking at the scientific basis for why this could work. And what he says is that it actually helps the body respond better to stress. It promote something called autophagy, which is literally the body does its own cleanup.
Autophagy.
Right.
Autophagy, yes.
You say tomato, I say tomato, you know.
Right.
But you're saying it the way it's spelled.
Yes, but it's autophagy.
Yeah. So auto means self, like an automobile is a self-driving vehicle. And phage means eating. So self-eating, it's like you're sort of eating yourself. And you burn
house
down your
cleaning.
Fat. Yep. And you do your own house cleaning when you put your body at rest from eating, from incessant eating. Now, what's interesting is, as I'm reading in this book by B. Wilson, is that we're doing absolutely diametrically the opposite in the society. We have invented the snack
as an art form.
Yeah. And so we consume 30% of our calories as snacks. So it's like, oh my goodness, like, it's, you know, I have breakfast, it's mid-morning, I must eat something because I got to go work, I got to make it to lunch, and then I'm going to have
lunch.
Then I have the mid-afternoon crash, and I have a snack, and then I have dinner, and then I got to, and then, you know, like I'm out, you know, at a show, and then I go, you know, pull into a drive-in, and I have like, you know.
Right. I need a bedtime taco
snack. Or something like that.
Yeah.
It's people eat continuously, and there's very little rest.
Right.
So the point of it is, he actually advocates a more extreme version of this, which is what's called the 16-8.
Yeah.
Which is that if you really want to...
You eat during the 8 hours.
You eat during the 8 hours
and you rest.
And rest
during the 16.
So let's translate that. That would mean that you might eat, you know,
Between 8 and 4.
Or 12, 8 12
to 4
and 8.
PM.
Yeah, but
yes.
Who can, you know, what normal person can stop eating after 4? That's a tough...
I like it better that way.
You do.
I would rather skip dinner. Then skip breakfast. Breakfast?
I'm in awe of you.
I turns my engine on.
Right.
I get warm. So
I find, and this, the holidays is a really good time to gauge what I revert to a natural rhythm. Mm. Is I can go till like noon. Mm. You know, I get up. I, you know, drink a little black coffee, drink some water, and then I go and exercise, and then I kind of putter around a little more, and then, you know, then I'm really hungry. Then I have a big breakfast. It's 11:30 or 12. Boom, start the regular day. That's my eating window. What's harder when you delay it that way is to not eat late at night.
Yes. Because you're basically shifting those three meals into later in the day.
My body still wants three meals. So
exactly.
So I can't, you know, then if I eat lunch at, you know, at like 3 or 4.
Right.
I can't stop eating then. Then I'm not hungry till like 8.
Yes.
So I don't want to eat too late.
Right.
Because that messes that up.
Right.
But anyway, so.
My big thing is I never want to eat late, and I try not to eat anything past 7 o'clock or 7:30. Because then I'm not going to have breakfast until after 7:30 the next morning. We all need to be fasting for 12 hours. All of us.
Yes.
No ifs, ands, or buts. Yep. Doing the 16-8. You're kicking it up several notches.
And what the nice thing I find about exercise in the morning is that it abolishes hunger, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there are types of exercise which encourage hunger. So if I were to say, well, okay, I'm going to take like a, you know, a 50-mile bike ride, on an empty stomach, it's not, I'm going to be...
No, you need more continuous fuel.
At mile 28, I'm going to bonk, and I'm going to be like having hallucinations of food. You know, I'm going to be seeing like...
Where's Denny's?
Yeah, I'm looking for, a house of pancakes, you know.
Right. Exactly. No. It's, you could do the intermittent fasting differently. Rocky is also asking, does fasting involve skipping my morning coffee?
No.
Yes, if you put cream and sugar in it.
Yes, of course, because otherwise it's just a Trojan horse for calories.
If it's a frappo-wappo,
whatever you're getting, that's actually
a sundae, yeah, you're going to skip that.
Right.
Here's another important question.
By the way, that brings up another point in B. Wilson's book, is Americans drink their calories.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's only one requisite solution for thirst, which is to drink water.
That's right.
But body doesn't know. You're like, you know, I'm really thirsty, so I drink beer. I drink like, you know, like a frappa wappa, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like... I'm still thirsty.
Right.
You know,
right.
But I just consume those calories. Those calories are not satiating like calories are from food with fiber and with substance.
Yeah.
They go down real fast and they hit you fast.
And another thing is that often many of us are hungry, but many of us, we think we're hungry, but we're actually thirsty. We didn't drink enough. Or all we drank was the coffee, we got dehydrated, we didn't replace any other water or eat a good breakfast where we're also getting some water from our produce and things like that.
Right.
So sometimes we think we're hungry, but we're actually thirsty. If your coffee is black, Rocky, you can have it because it's calorically almost insignificant.
Yeah.
And Rocky is also asking another very important question. Does intermittent fasting affect my metabolism by slowing it down? Consumer dieter, beware. It may.
Yes.
It may mm-hmm. if you're really overdoing it. Right, I almost said if you're like really abusing it.
Yes.
You're doing this 7 days a week of the 18, of the 16-8.
Right.
Maybe you don't need to go that far. Do you have hypothyroid? It may not be in your best interest to do that consistently.
But it's also about caloric restriction. Now, there is a certain amount of caloric restriction
that
involved
is,
when you limit the time that you eat, but you're actually permitted to eat a requisite, you know, I mean, a relatively
you can eat 2,000 calories, but it'll be harder to do in
within
a 6-7
window
hour
of time.
Window.
Yeah.
It's
right.
like pilot.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And okay. Especially if you're doing very fibrous foods, very nutrient dense foods, that could mean a lot of protein. That's hard
or
to take in.
Fat and protein for satiety.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Because I've
exactly.
like you know if I had. If I'm going to, if I see I have a very busy schedule at the office, I have to get very early.
Yeah.
I might have a little extra protein and fat because I'll know what, you know, I'm going to eat at like 7 and I won't be able to get out to lunch to like 1 or 2.
Right.
I might have, you know, a little bit more like a piece of salmon or something like that.
Right. Eat a more substantial breakfast.
You know, or a half an avocado or something.
Yes. Yes. Along with the poached eggs or
right,
something.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know, to just.
Yeah.
Hit me a little harder and just it sits a little longer in the stomach
right.
and provides satiety. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so anybody getting hungry here? I'm actually not, but you know, some of our listeners may be heading for the refrigerator. We're talking about food. Okay, we're going to pause and allow you to you know, queue up a snack.
Must have a snack. Otherwise, skip the snack.
You've been listening for 20 minutes, so you should get a reward. And we'll be right back. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. Keep them coming. And we'll be returning in just a moment.